Good afternoon, all roof and beam. We have Real Journeys Cadrona Alpine Resort and Town Out of Bartles.
Catherine Fiona Black. I work for Real Journeys Limited, managing Real Journeys and its subsidiary companies, Department of Conservation, Concessions, Resource Consents and other regulatory authorisations, along with other operational related duties. I am a qualified commercial launch master, coach driver and have a Bachelor in Climate Science degree, a postgraduate diploma in business and administration, and have completed a postgraduate environmental planning and law paper from Massey University. I have worked in the New Zealand tourism industry for 28 years, initially as one of the operators of Monarch Wildlife Cruises in Dunedin, which involved a wide variety of roles from deckhand to marketing manager and operations manager. For the last 12 years, I have worked for Real Journeys, and in the first instance as Milford Sound Branch Manager, and for the last 9 years in my current role. Through these various roles, I have gained a considerable knowledge of the tourism industry, including the evolving challenges faced by this industry. Since 2011, I have been a member of the Southern Conservation Board, which is a statutory body appointed by the Minister of Conservation and established under the Conservation Act. This involves me in many regionally and nationally important conservation issues, mainly relating to the management of a conservation estate, including freshwater management, freedom camping, pest species management, and tourism infrastructure and visitor management, especially in the context of managing the natural and remote values of conservation areas. Real Journeys Limited has been operating for over 60 years. In 1954, Les and Oliver Hutchins began operating the Manapouri Doubtful Sound Tourist Company, running excursions from Manapouri to Doubtful Sound and return. In 1966, Les and Oliver acquired Fjord and Travel Limited with its Tiana Glowworm Caves and Milford Track Lake Transport operation, and began trading as Fjord and Travel Limited. Ongoing expansion followed with the purchase of the vintage steamship, the TSS Earnslaw, in Queenstown in 1969, and with the establishment of cruises in Milford Sound in 1970. Since 2002, Fjord and Travel Limited has operated all its tourism excursions under the Real Journeys brand, and in 2006 changed its company name to Real Journeys Limited. Tiana Developments Limited is a wholly owned subsidiary of Real Journeys and is the landowner of some of the properties managed by Real Journeys, including Water Peak. While remaining a family business, the company continues to expand with the purchase of Cadrona Alpine Resort and 150 hectares of land at Water Peak in 2013, and the International Antarctic Centre in Christchurch in 2015. Real Journeys and its subsidiaries now have operational bases in Christchurch, Milford Sound, Tiana, Manapouri, Queenstown, Wanaka, Bluff and Stewart Island. The company offers a range of quality tourism excursions, including multi-day discovery expeditions around the southern fjords in Stewart Island, daytime and overnight cruises on Milford and Doubtful Sounds, with daily coach connections from Tiana and Queenstown, Tiana Global Caves excursions, guided Milford Track day walks, Stewart Island ferries, tours and accommodation on Stewart Island. In Queenstown, cruises on Lake Waikatipu aboard the TSS Earnslaw, combined with Walter Peak High Country excursions and dining options at Colonel's Walter Peak Homestead. Accommodation, skiing and mountain biking at Cadrona, and tours and excursions at the International Antarctic Centre. Real Journeys is the largest tourism operator in the region and has a well-earned reputation for providing high-quality excursions enjoyed by visitors from New Zealand and around the world. Real Journeys is one of the most successful and highly respected tourism companies in New Zealand. Although Real Journeys' long-established base of operations has been Fiordland, the company has a 46-year connection with the Queenstown district, and these connections have increased over the years as the company has grown and our products have diversified. This is reflected in our current employment figures, with 32% of Real Journeys employees, including the company chief executive and chief financial officer, being Queenstown based. And if I add in Cadrona Alpine Resort employees, this percentage increases to 53% in the summer months and rises to approximately 75% in winter months. To the year ended September 2015, Real Journeys carried 203,000 passengers on TSS Earnslaw, up 20% from 2014, and 60,000 passengers on our coaches ex Queenstown, up 20% from 2014. This equates to 34% of Real Journeys passengers for the year ended September 2015, and this percentage is up 32% from 32% in 2014. Real Journeys has considerable land and infrastructure investments in the district and wants to see the district manage to protect the values and the assets which make the area a desirable place to live and visit. Real Journeys does not believe this is happening at present, and this has led to significant issues in Queenstown which are having adverse effects on the area. For instance, the Wilding Pines have been poorly managed, changing many of the district landscapes to something resembling North America, contributing to the degradation of the district's landscape values. Further, the traffic congestion experienced when travelling into Queenstown Town Centre via vehicle often creates a very frustrating and torturous experience for residents and visitors who are unfamiliar with the town. If these matters and many others like it are not addressed, the desirability of Queenstown as a tourism destination will be compromised, killing the golden goose that the district relies on for its economic well-being. Visitor arrivals to New Zealand numbered 3.17 million in the year to January 2016, the highest ever annual total. This was 11% higher than in January 2015, up 305,000. Australia was 1.33 million, China 371,000, and United States 347,000 were again New Zealand's biggest visitor sources, contributing 61% of all arrivals in the January 2016 year. These three countries also provided the biggest increases compared with the 2015 year, with arrivals from China up 110,000, Australia up 72,000, and United States up 26,000. Total arrivals have been most significantly boosted by the growth out of China, with total arrivals up 42.5% for the year ended January 2016. And of more significance than the volume is the average expenditure per Chinese visitors was $5,100, a 30% increase for the year. Plus, put into context, the China market is now on a par with the more mature markets of the UK and US average expenditure per arrival of 5,400 and 4,800 respectively. In addition, the face of Chinese travel has changed significantly, with the China market maturing more quickly than any other markets. And as recently as 2 years ago, the Chinese market was much more heavily skewed towards guided tours at 53%, with just 17% in the free and independent traveller segment. The market has progressed quickly to the more independent style of travel, with FYTs now comprising 31% of the market. The independent travellers are having a significant impact on the total value of the Chinese visitors, and by the end of 2014, the Chinese visitor expenditure had broken $1 billion, and the per person expenditure was second only to the long-staying Germans. Also, independent travellers travel into their regions, stay longer, and Chinese holiday visitors now stay on an average of 8.3 days compared with 6.2 days in 2010. In February 2015, over Chinese New Year, there were more Chinese holiday visitors than any other country, surpassing the number of visitors from Australia and equaling the total for Americans, Canadians and British combined. And the 215,000 Chinese holiday visitors in the year ended February 2015. Some 73,000 were FIT, up 60% on the previous year, while 144,000 were group, up 8%. And just to give you some background on the Chinese visitor industry and how it's changing, I've found some relevant articles online. The Queenstown tourism industry is a significant contributor to the New Zealand visitor economy, and in the year ended June 2014, the district captured over 10% of all New Zealand commercial accommodation guests' nights, compared to 0.7% it represents of the national population. Visitor expenditure in Queenstown Lakes was estimated to be over $1.5 million in 2013, around 8.5% of the nationwide visitor expenditure, and the second highest level of expenditure in any territorial authority region. Growth in the nominal visitor expenditure over 2009 to 2013 in the district has been higher than the growth in most other districts in New Zealand, and the Queenstown area experienced the fastest growth in visitor expenditure over a year out of all regions at 7.6% per annum. The majority of visitors to Queenstown Lakes are international at 65% compared to the New Zealand average of 36%. In 2013. Growth in international visitor nights has exceeded other areas of New Zealand. Similarly, the district has achieved the highest growth in international visitor expenditure over the 2009-13 period, with out of all the territorial authorities, 7.7%. And compared to 1.3% nationally. to back up some of this, I've pulled down from the Statistics New Zealand site the commercial accommodation for Queenstown for the most recent period. Over the last 20 years, New Zealand has experienced a visitor arrival growth rate of 4% per annum despite the following global shocks: the 1997 Asian financial crisis, the 2001 9/11 terrorist attacks, 2002-3 sales outbreak, and the 2008 onwards global economic crisis, and the 2011 Christchurch and Japan earthquakes. The Ministry of Business and Innovation and Employment is forecasting an annual visitor growth rate of 4% per annum from 2015 to 2021. Accordingly, going on past performance, Real Journeys believes the district can expect to receive more than 4% growth per annum in visitor numbers, and as emerging markets such as China and India transition to FIT, a large proportion of these visitors will be travelling independently in rental vehicles. Consequently, Real Journeys contends that the QLBC should be planning for this anticipated tourism growth. However, this is not reflected in the proposed district plan. For simplicity's sake, I will only refer to Real Journeys Limited, not TNR Developments Limited. Nevertheless, some of the points made are relevant to either or both entities. As a company, we were very disappointed with the timeframe set for this proposed district plan process. The summer season is a very busy time of year for most tourism operators, and generally we do not have the time or the resources to dedicate to reviewing such significant planning documents. For this reason, Real Journeys contracted John Evans and Associates Limited to submit on the proposed district plan on our behalf. Nevertheless, because John Evans and Associates are not tourism operators and do not know the intricacies of our business, their submissions still require considerable input from Real Journeys to ensure all our comments were addressed in their submissions. The tight time frames, especially for making further submissions and reviewing the Section 42A reports, were far from helpful. Taking on the work of reviewing the proposed district plan documents with such short lead times has resulted in the postponement of other scheduled Real Journeys work and has resulted in delays in lodging resource consent applications for works that are critical to our operation. In addition, some of these resource consent applications have had to be contracted out rather than being prepared by myself, resulting in additional unforeseen costs for Real Journeys. I believe these proposed district plan timeframes have resulted in the very limited number of tourism operators or tourism-related businesses submitting on the proposed district plan, which will not be beneficial in the long run, and a district which relies so heavily on tourism for its economic well-being. We are also disappointed in the effort QLDC has invested in recognising and providing for tourism in the proposed district plan, and how few changes to the proposed district plan have been recommended by staff as a result of the submission process. It does not feel like our submissions have been afforded due consideration. For example, the Section 42A reports are silent on our suggestion to create a new chapter. Also, we repeatedly ask QLB staff to discuss our concerns with the proposed district plan, but staff have been too busy to meet. Strategic direction. Policy 3.2.1.1.3. The implication that the quality of tourism product needs to be improved is offensive, and we do not believe the proposed district plan is the appropriate mechanism for addressing the quality of tourism attractions in the district. We appreciate that the QLDC wishes to ensure that town centres and the district remain vibrant. Nevertheless, we believe it is impractical for the proposed district plan to focus on consolidating the visitor industry in the town centres, even by default. With the current traffic congestion, especially on State Highway 6 between Central Queenstown and Frankton. Yes, it is appropriate for visitor services such as retail, banks, restaurants, booking centres to be located in town centres, but not the bulk of visitor attractions. It is New Zealand's landscape which attract the vast majority of international visitors to the region, and the attraction for visitors is to get out into the countryside and experience these landscapes firsthand in some form. Accordingly, it is not a practical strategy to effectively advocate for the growth in the tourism sector to be focused in towns' centres. This is particularly critical with respect to the provision of more commercial visitor accommodation. Much of the visitor accommodation which needs to be developed to provide for visitor demand cannot practically be located in town centres. This is because there is an insufficient supply of large sites that can be readily developed for commercial accommodation. It seems to me because the proposed district plan has such a paucity of objectives and policies relating to tourism, tourism has been gathered up with the objectives and policies which relate to town centres, even though there are tourism-related business activities right across the district which contribute to the economy. The QLDC planners and the Section 42A report writers acknowledge the importance of the tourism industry to the district's economy, and as stated above, Real Journeys contends that the tourism industry will continue to grow and will remain central to the district's economy. Yet we do not believe the tourism industry has been bestowed appropriate status in the proposed district plan, even with the recommended revisions. Not only with respect to providing for tourism activities, but also including provisions that will cater for the required tourism industry infrastructure, including transport and visitor accommodation, and especially in the light of the predicted tourism growth. An efficient transport network connecting the district's towns to the rest of the country is essential to the ongoing success of the tourism industry and the economic viability of the district. The QLDC Economic Development Strategy identifies that parts of the district's roading network are vulnerable and subject to congestion. The inability for the Queenstown roading network to function efficiently is particularly critical with the ongoing growth in the FIT market. Barry Kidd, Chief Executive of the Rental Vehicle Association New Zealand, advised in early February 2016 that the rental car industry thought peak season New Zealand-wide hires would hit 100,000 a month, but now estimated they would reach at least 120,000 for both January and February 2016. It could be as high as 145,000, and with 80% of them would be overseas drivers. We're operating at pretty near full capacity. Further, the General Manager of Go Rentals, James Stelbleach, stated that his company has added more than 700 new vehicles to its fleet to cope with the demand. We've got some periods of time where we're verging on sold out on all our car classes. As well as the overall increase in tourism numbers, the average rental period has risen to over 7 days. The traffic congestion in Queenstown, especially in the town centre, results in significant costs for our business, such as for our day trips to Milford Sound and Doubtful Sound, ex-Queenstown. Real Journeys can no longer pick up and drop off its passengers from Queenstown visitor accommodation with our coaches, and we engage taxis to undertake this service at a cost of approximately $75,000 per year. And this is a significant cost which is increasing annually. The Queenstown traffic congestion issue was also identified in the January 2015 issue of the online magazine Architecture Now.
You don't need to read out that quote.
Okay. Accordingly, Real Journeys as an operator of on average 8 to 9 Queenstown-based coaches per day carrying in excess of 60,000 passengers annually contends that the proposed district plan strategic direction chapter specifically needs to include provisions to address shortcomings of the district's transport system to ensure the district's main industry, tourism, is not hampered and saddled with additional costs, including policies around using the waterways for public transport to reduce road congestion. In addition, at present, the proposed district plan's strategic direction chapter only addresses housing supply and ignores the need to provide for additional visitor accommodation, including holiday parks for camper vans. In terms of the requirements for camper vans, being supplied with some information by Fergus Brown, who's the Chief Executive Officer of the Holiday Parks Association of New Zealand. So I've got that information there as well. Colliers International state that the number of hotel rooms in Queenstown has remained static since 2012, with 25 hotels and circa 3,200 rooms. However, occupancy has increased significantly from 63% in 2012 to 77% for the year ended September 2015. Average room rates achieved grew from $143 in 2012 to $160 in 2015, the highest rate out of 5 major markets. These record growth rates and average daily room rates mean that the Queenstown became the best performing hotel market in the country at the year ended September 2015, with revenue per available room increasing from $90 in 2012 to $123 in 2015. During February 2016, especially during Chinese New Year, Queenstown accommodation was totally booked out, and groups travelling to Milford Sound for day trips had to be accommodated in Dunedin, Invercargill, Twizel, Mararama, and even at Kidron and Alpine Resort. Also, because of the lack of available accommodation, much of Real Journeys' business from traditional markets, Australia, UK, USA, and Germany, was displaced into March. However, it is impossible to gauge how much business was lost over the this busy summer due to the lack of beds in the Queenstown region. Therefore, to cope with this growing tourism market, more commercial accommodation needs to be developed in Queenstown. Nevertheless, there is currently a lack of available land and services to accommodate the growing FIT segment. Yet, the proposed district plan appears completely silent on this particular issue. Real Journeys maintains that the strategic direction chapter should include goals and objectives with respect to the entire relevant infrastructure which is required to support this growing tourism industry. In some locations in the district, such as Walter Peak and the Cadrona Alpine Resort, vital tourism in infrastructure includes the provision of roading, drinking water, wastewater treatment facilities, power generation and telecommunications facilities. In addition, water-based transport activities rely privately owned wharves, jetties and slipway infrastructure. That is, the proposed district plan does not acknowledge that in some locations the provision of private small-scale service infrastructure is critical to the operation of many enterprises. Also, while the Section 42A report recommends that the proposed district plan recognise this regionally significant infrastructure, it is not clear if this will apply to tourism infrastructure. Real Journeys believes that the proposed district plan focuses largely on the terrestrial environment of the district and does not place enough emphasis on the significance of the district's waterways, not only for their really natural character, but their value as an important resource in the district. Such a water chapter should also recognise the importance of water transport in the district, including providing for and protecting the operation of the TSS Ansell, along with the vessels, essential infrastructure such as wharves, jetties and Calvin National Slipway. Accordingly, we are advocating for the proposed district plan to give the district's waterways their appropriate status by including a separate water chapter in the proposed district plan, and this should in turn be reflected in the strategic direction chapter. From reading some of the QLDC proposed district plan reports, it is obvious to me that QLDC staff have not identified all the issues creating problems in the district's housing sector. Consequently, how can the council develop appropriate plan provisions to address this issue? For instance, homeowners who have traditionally taken in flatmates or boarders to subsidise their mortgage can now rent out a room for a couple of nights a week with Airbnb and attract the same rent as a flatmate would pay per week. However, with Airbnb, homeowners do not have the inconvenience of having full-time flatmates and only accept Airbnb bookings when it suits. This is contributing to a lack of suitable worker accommodation in the district, which is in turn contributing to the high staff and the turnover, which inflates business running costs and is making the area a less desirable destination for seasonal workers on working holiday visas that the resort relies upon for labour. Landscapes. The main emphasis of the proposed District 10 landscapes chapter is terrestrial landscapes, not the district waterways, further accentuating our contention that the plan provisions relating to waterways need to be allocated into a separate chapter separate from their proposed rural zone. Policy 6.3.1.8.7 in the revised landscape chapter. This amendment to this policy totally changes the meaning of this policy and ignores the point Real Journeys is trying to make, refer to the photos below. Extreme Wrightsville, such as illustrated below, makes it very difficult to navigate a vessel on Lake Octopus in the dark. Navigation at night requires good night vision to pick out navigation marker lights and the navigation lights of other vessels. Hence, the waterways of the district need to be protected from undue glare to ensure vessel navigation is not further compromised. Nevertheless, Real Journeys does support any policy which protects the natural dark of the night sky for its intrinsic value. In this chapter, there is significant importance placed on maintaining the rural character of the district's landscapes. Real Journeys believes this is a flawed concept because QLDC is effectively advocating for the maintenance of an extremely modified environment rather than supporting preservation of the natural character of waterways and protection of the outstanding natural landscapes in accordance with Section 6A and 6B of the RMA. As a result, Real Journeys contends that farming is afforded a disproportionate status in the proposed district plan based on invalid assumptions. For example, the following statements in the proposed district plan regarding the open zone of farmland is erroneous. The open character of productive farmland is a key element of the landscape character, which can be vulnerable to degradation from subdivision, development and non-farming activities. The prevalence of large farms and landholdings contributes to the open space and rural working character of the landscape. The predominance of open space over housing and related touristic elements is a strong determinant of the character of the district's rural landscapes. The productive farmland in the district is not open in character. Farmland in dairy, horticulture and viticulture is the most productive farmland in the district and is not open in character compared to the district's high country stations. High country stations have relatively low stocking ratios and have a much lower productivity compared to lowland farms. High country is characterised by hilly terrain and low pasture production, especially during the cold winter months, and is used predominantly for sheep farming based on fine production. Flat to rolling country usually has good all-year-round pasture production and supports almost all New Zealand's dairy cattle in addition to large numbers of sheep and beef cattle. In addition, in 2013 Otago Economic Overview, Bill found the primary production sector is a relatively small part of Queenstown Lakes, accounting for as little as 3% of the district's employment and GDP, whereas the equivalent tourism-related data shows that over 20% of the district's GDP is accounted for by tourism. Accordingly, Real Journeys maintains farming should not be given greater precedence in the proposed district plan, especially compared to the tourism industry, as it is the tourism industry which has sustained the region economically for the last few decades. Provisions of policy 6.3.1.12 are relevant for not only providing for regionally significant infrastructure, but as stated above, businesses such as Real Journeys need to locate infrastructure such as telecommunications equipment for health and safety on hilltops and outstanding natural features and landscapes. And these requirements should not be restricted by such a narrow policy. Policy 6.3.4.3, again, the focus on the proposed district plan seems to be mainly on the terrestrial environment. The adverse effects on landscape character are usually best seen from out on the district's lakes and rivers, and therefore the above policy should also reflect this. Real Journeys considers policy 6.3.5.3 and 6.3.5.4 to be unsound as they are based on maintaining the status quo of a currently modified environment. Before human arrival, much of the high country was in forest, and when the grazing ceases, tussock grasslands recover and succession back to dry forest begins. This recovery of vegetation helps sequester carbon and provides habitat and improves water management. That is, the existing open landscapes and the established character of the district are the result of forest clearance and outdated farming practices such as burning to encourage new growth. Real Journeys considers replanting endemic species along the margins should be encouraged, not discouraged by such policies. Also, what is really wrong with screening a development to reduce its adverse visual? Regarding policy 6.3.38.2. Rural Journeys contends the requirements for tourism-related activities to enhance the appreciation of landscape and protect, maintain, or enhance landscape quality, character, and visual amenity values is impractical, and many of the existing tourism attractions will not comply with this proposed policy, such as bungee jumping or the skyline gondola. It would be hard to argue that many bungee jumpers gain an enhanced appreciation of landscapes, or that the alleged bungee and the skyline gondola protect, maintain, or enhance landscape quality, character, and visual community values. Consequently, Rural Journeys maintains that a more permissive policy is essential to ensure appropriate tourism development is enabled and not stifled. In terms of Rule 6.4.1.3, Rural Journeys contends that the Wolf Creek Rural Visitor Zone should be included in this rule to provide for Rural Journeys' proposed developments. Conclusion. Rural Journeys' primary concern is to ensure that the proposed district plan adequately provides for the growing tourism industry, including the provision of facilities, infrastructure, and services which are required to support an efficient tourism industry, such as adequate commercial accommodation, an effective non-congested transport network, wastewater treatment facilities, power generation facilities, telecommunication facilities, adequate and safe wharf and slipway structures. It is very disquieting that the proposed district plan is quiet on the significant issue of providing for the anticipated tourism growth, especially in terms of addressing the deficit in commercial visitor accommodation and providing solutions to traffic congestion in and around Queenstown. I believe some of this can be put down to relying on tourism data from pre-2012, when the tourism industry, like the rest of the economy, was in the grips of a global financial crisis, such as the information referred to in the McDermott-Miller Strategies and Association and Planning and Research, November 2013-4. However, the tourism industry has been recovering since 2012 and has experienced a record season in 2014-15. Hence, there was ample opportunity to obtain revised estimates and update the proposed district plan accordingly. Rural Journeys believes that it is only through a vibrant and sustainable tourism industry that we can reinvest and ensure the quality of our tourism offerings are maintained and, in many cases, enhanced. To this end, we ask that the proposed district plan be further revised to adequately enable tourism activities across the district.
Mr. Farrell, I'm putting this question to you because your company was the address for service and presented your responsibility. I'm just wondering whether you read our procedural minute, where on page 4 we said where extra time is sought, all evidence will need to be lodged with council 5 working days in advance. And if you had read it, why was this not lodged in advance?
To be perfectly honest, sir, whilst it appears the evidence, I was of the understanding that there was going to be a presentation for the submission from the attorney.
It's not a legal submission, is it?
No, but it's a submission from the advocate, sir. It's an advocacy statement.
Essentially evidence, a factual basis. And I think that the requirement was that it be served in advance, so that we could read it in advance. think we should. I raise this point because we have, particularly the people sitting behind you, recently refused leave to hear evidence that was sought to be lodged late. And I want to make it clear that in future streams that fail, you will not be receiving evidence lodged late. Commissioner St. Clair, do you have any questions, Ms. Black?
I don't have any questions on this. Mine more relate to Mr. Farrell's evidence.
Commissioner Robinson.
Mr. Black, looking at the statistics you quoted, the big picture question that occurs to me is it in fact realistic for Queenstown or Queenstown District to be planning or seeking to plan for a progressively increasing number of tourists rolling into town? Are we approaching a point at a time where the town should be putting up the full upside?
I think that would be a very difficult thing to achieve, because for how many decades have Queenstown been sold as the destination, New Zealand destination, and how counterproductive that would be to the overall tourism industry. So even though they all turn up on our doorstep here, this trend of the market going more to friend and dependent travellers means that they're travelling more out into the other regions, and it's been bringing economic benefits to areas outside of Queenstown, and many of the areas around Queenstown leverage off that.
I'm aware from the media that it's also creating some level of disquiet for your independent travellers who are not familiar with New Zealand roads and New Zealand road conditions. So that also occurs to me as an issue, that there are signs of that the whole system is getting a bit creased.
Yeah, and again, that's been a strategy of Tourism New Zealand since I can remember sitting in presentations in the early 90s where they were pushing free and independent travel, and it was this idea of getting people out of the coaches going down the Blue Ribbon route, which is Christchurch, Queenstown, Milford Sound, Queenstown, Christchurch, and out, so that the whole country got the benefits of tourism, not just the likes of Christchurch, Queenstown, and Rotorua.
Well, I suppose the way that takes my thinking is to question, you said you don't provide and kill the golden goose.
Yeah.
Is there a danger that if you do provide, you'll also kill it because you're going to lose the attractiveness that's bringing all the people?
Yeah, well, this is this whole thing that why I'm putting it before you is that we need to look at the big picture, and maybe that's a discussion that the community needs to have, is, you know, when is too much? And also with the ratepayer base subsidising, you know, all the facilities that need to be put in, like public toilets, car parking, disposal facilities for camper vans, and you know, it's based on that ratepayer base, but you know, even that's sure the number of ratepayers is increasing, but it's still, it's, this is about looking at the big picture for Queenstown and where it wants to be in 20 years' time. And there, you know, visitors are coming, and, you know, it is seen as one of the important contributors to diversifying New Zealand's economy and bringing in dollars to the country instead of being so reliant on agriculture. So,
it's an apt time to talk about that with the milk price getting to the floor.
Yes.
In terms of your 4.4, talking about visitor accommodation, drawing our attention to the obvious impracticality of putting any more hotels in the Queenstown town centre.
Yes.
Where are they going to go if they don't go to the town centre?
Well, that was the thing when I was reading the reports that that McDermott Miller report seemed to look at some of the commercial zoning, but all the discussion seemed to be about retail, and it was like, you know, somebody needs to be thinking about where more accommodation can go. And the other thing is, with this trend towards free and independent travellers, X percentage are turning up in campervans, and so more holiday parks are going to be needed, especially to contend with the freedom camping issue.
On that point of the location of visitor accommodation, I take it then Real Journeys is not happy with the loss of the land, consented land at Kawerau Falls, for visitor accommodation that's been turned into residential accommodation.
In the past, because there was space, developers came in and found a piece of land and got a hotel built, but land supply is running out. So,
but if there was demand now, surely that land would have developed for hotels.
Yeah, but because of the global financial crisis, we're only reaching the point now that hotel developers are thinking, right, it's going to be cost effective to build another hotel, but it might take 5 years for them to get to the stage where it's completed.
But in both those cases, the Kawerau Falls and the Reeds, the zoned land has been provided and decisions have been made, as you say, in the last 5 years by the developers slash owners to, instead of providing high-density VA, to go into low-density residential apartments.
Mm.
So that fundamentally is not a failure of district plan, as the operative district plan. It is a decision by investors, which the plan itself cannot prevent happening.
Mm.
It can enable, it can't enforce.
Yeah.
So how do you suggest overcoming that? And it also just, by the way, Pantan 50 area does include VA. There are two hotels being built in town currently.
I'm not a Queenstown resident.
No. So there are some hotels being built in town now, but those are cases where zoning is provided.
But it was as much as anything putting too much emphasis on having the tourism industry focus in town centres that it won't work, and that there will have to be these satellite developments, whether it's another Millbrook or another Kawerau development. That was the point I was trying to make.
Well, I suppose where I was is, does Real Journeys have a position about where they need to be, or just that there needs to be some?
No, we do not have a position about.
In terms of
where they need to be.
Thank you. In terms of your reference to tourism infrastructure, your 4.16, you come back to this towards the very end. Are there any aspects of tourism infrastructure that are different to the infrastructure that services the residential community?
the point I was trying to make is that, you know, we have a wastewater treatment facility at Cadrona and at Wolf Peak. Well, presumably in some locations people are on septic tanks, but that's a different from a wastewater treatment facility.
Does the district plan create any difficulties for real journeys in the operation or maintenance of those two wastewater treatment facilities?
Some of the provisions coming in about natural hazards might create problems because of, like, the one at Water Peak at the moment is sitting where it would be rock, and effectively in a rock fall zone.
But does that make it a bad proposal, a bad policy, or a bad proposal? So was it a bad sighting initially to put it under a rock pool, or is it wrong to then say that you shouldn't put it under a rock pool?
But the thing is that then if we want to, we have to increase the size of it, and maybe under the new plan provisions, turning around saying that. That wouldn't be a sensible thing to do, and you need to cite it in another way.
But maybe it wouldn't be a sensible thing. Yeah. I mean, that's the point. Is the policy bad, or is the is it just an expensive, is it potentially a good policy that might be expensive for RJ to implement, which doesn't make it necessarily a bad policy?
Well, it's down to, you know, because it's a wastewater treatment plant, sure, if the rock falls come down and fall in it, you know, nobody's going to be injured or anything, but it means we've got a problem and we have to do something rapidly about fixing it. But yeah, it's
I suppose the follow-up question is, do you think the district plan should be trying to manage for natural hazards?
You know, well, in many ways, I would say I would agree with that. That it's you know, it's a business risk.
But isn't it more than a business risk if there were to be a problem with your wastewater and it ended up in the lake? Then it's a community-wide issue. It's not just a business risk; it's a resource risk.
Yeah,
there's a public health risk.
The government has anything to do at the moment, the council can have an option in a post Christchurch world. The question I had about your discussion of farming and, from your point of view, excessive weight given to farming, you've emphasised that these are modified landscapes, which is clearly true. The natural landscape was a forestry, I think I read it from Totara and Tussock at the higher. Is that what the plan should be providing the district returns to?
Well, in some areas, particularly like, you know, where we've got wilding pines, the only thing that will keep those pines down in the long run is other vegetation that excludes light to stop the seedlings coming up. So in locations like that, it seems to me that that's the logical solution. Otherwise, we're going to be poisoning them forever to keep, because those seed sources will just keep on popping up for decades.
And on the basis that the owners of those properties presumably can't be expected to plant out their properties as, in effect, parks and reserves for the benefit of the community, including the tourism community. How do you think in practice that that's going to be accomplished?
dilemma with this wilding pine issue is either we spend decades using herbicide or we use some other strategies.
So, I suppose I should ask the sharp end of that question. There's a series of wilding pines at the bottom of the Cadrona ski field along the road and above Helicopter Corner, Helicopter Flat Corner, is Cadrona Alpine Resort working to get rid of those?
Yeah.
I'll speak to that one. They're actually not wilding pines. They were brought in as Norwegian pines that were specifically genetically designed not to propagate.
Right, so they...
Yeah. So, and we are looking at removing those at the moment.
Because they haven't grown in 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, I was going to say, they're 15 years old, and that's as small as... They're still quite small. The previous owner...
That's why I thought about wildlands, because the...
Yeah, no, they planted them specifically there because they wanted to test glade skiing, so tree skiing for New Zealanders with a species that wouldn't propagate. Real Journeys, I would say, is not supportive of that, and we are looking at removing that.
And can you tell me something about proposed developments and what's the plan?
Basically at the moment, when we're busy, the farm tour is at capacity. We don't have enough seating, so we've got plans to redevelop the farm tour operation, and also changing the dining offer during that will repeat means that much of the time we're actually booked out. So particularly with we have conflicting demands with functions that we might end up with another building on site to provide different catering options, mainly for the conference and incentives one.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Just wondering, in terms of the 4.8 re-transport, do you think the answer is for the community to therefore pay to keep on increasing the capacity for the and parking, FIT, motor camp parks, roading, or would it be perhaps an alternative supplement, whatever, to provide other means for, so that they don't actually all come and take any cars out? Because it's a big impost on the community, especially during the peak seasons.
It's one of these things that it's the way New Zealand has been sold overseas now for decades is this experience where you can get a rental car and get off the beaten track and find those remote beaches where there's only half a dozen other people on the beach. So it's it would require a big turnaround in the way the country's been marketed. But in terms of the Queenstown district, to me, I think we need to look at satellite parking or something in Frankton and with shuttle buses so that all those camper vans, they don't attempt to drive into the city, into the town, and also particularly with these Chinese visitors who seem to, they travel in family groups and they travel in convoy, so I don't know whether you've met them on the road where you have like four of them, and if one of the turns, they will follow the leader and they don't give way to anybody else. It would be far better if they could park out of town and come into a bus or some other public transport means.
Okay, so So you are agreeing that it would be good to give some direction and
yep.
the alternative really as well as
yep.
trying to just provide capacity.
Yes.
Thank you. On your 4.16, you mentioned provisional private small-scale service infrastructure is critical to your working in the enterprise. Can you give us some examples of that?
That's what I was talking about with, you know, having, like, water people got our own independent power supply, water supply, wastewater treatment, and at Cadrona we've got many similar sort of infrastructure.
So how do you propose that a policy might recognise that?
Well, at the moment, all the policies talk about regionally significant infrastructure, but because of this infrastructure is in a remote location, you can't function without it.
So if we had something in there that referred to resiliency of infrastructure provided private facility?
Yeah.
Okay. Your 4.19, the Super Water chapter, we have had alternative perspectives put there, one being that water is the preserve of OIC rather than us. Support of you this morning. Just wondering, in terms of, is it necessary to have a separate chapter for another layer to refer to for water? Or because if you are, for instance, doing something on a river in the lake that's in the rural zone or ONL, then you'd have to also refer to the land face. So that's adding a second layer to it. Could it be met by providing enough specificity to your concerns within an existing chapter?
Or is that a question for Mr. Farrell?
That might be a question for Mr. Farrell. It's just that I was referring to your 4.19.
Yeah.
Happy for Mr. Farrell to answer it?
Yeah. Okay, but can't do that.
And your turn, sure. Now, you also referred in your 4.20 to Airbnb.
Yeah.
And the highest staff turnover. I understand there's going to be a development that will be offering local businesses the opportunity to purchase work accommodation, for all worker accommodation within the CBD. Would that be something that RJ would look at doing to overcome this problem? I.e., is there also an onus on businesses rather than just the council provide?
Yeah, that we recognise that, and a lot of the staff turnover we have is associated with Walter Peak, and we're intending to put, it might take a couple of years to do it, some more staff accommodation at Walter Peak to address this issue. We have, the company has staff accommodation in Milford Sound and like Stewart Island, and it's the most frustrating thing to look after, and we in the past we've had staff accommodation in Te Anau and we've dispensed with that because it was more trouble than it was worth.
So you don't like being a landlord?
Well, you want us to provide.
So the answer seems to be no, because it's more the hassle than it's worth, but my suggestion, what I understand is that you're going to be given a chance that this would be managed by someone else, that would be provided investment for something provided. Is that something that...
Yeah, that we decided the only way that it would work effectively, if you had large enough premises, is you effectively had a caretaker or a camp mother who could... because so many of them are young people who, first time they've actually been away from home and they don't even know how to use a washing machine.
And so in other words, we had policies that allowed for that kind of development.
Yeah.
That would be a problem. Mm-hmm. 5.3, any policy which protects the natural drive of the night sky that's intrinsic value you do not support. Why not?
Do support.
I do support.
Oh, I'm sorry, I'm that wrong. Then can you also please give guidance in terms of the how, and Mr. Farrell, this might be a question for you, how you would make policy against clear on water. I understand why you said that the policy response was not what you needed, but That's it, thank you.
I'm just interested in your, at 4.1, your payment offence to policy 3.2.1.1.3. But then everything else I've heard from then on is you're wanting improvement in the quality or the services, all the things that are promoted in that, that policy. I know why I think you're taking offence that we're suggesting it could be better quality, but are you covering the whole table? Do you believe that every accommodation facility, every service in the district is up to the right standard or could it be improved over the next 10 years?
No, but that's why we've got Polmark.
No, just getting back to policy. So Ms. Felton asked, are you suggesting we do away with that policy because it's offensive to you? It seems to promote all the things you're asking for in your major part of your submission.
I just don't see how the QLBC, apart from through like building consent processes, that you should be considering the quality of attractions that it's and services.
Isn't that not the point of the policy? And I'm just wondering if really a planning issue rather than the way you're seeing it. It's about encouraging additional investment, which seems to be what you are saying is needed in terms of visitor accommodation. You're saying more investment is needed. I think the policy seems to be directed to that end. That's the way I read it. If you read it in that light, would it be something that Real Journeys would support?
Well, your worst competition is a bad operator. So we're always advocating that the quality of the tourism offering is improved. Because, you know, particularly with social media, you know, one bad experience or one shoddy operator can do so much damage to the industry.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions? I don't really have any further questions from Ms. Black. I have a question for Starlight. We've used up all the time that you set aside Real Journeys.
Really, sir?
And most of that was 40-odd minutes Ms. Black took to read your evidence that we could have read in advance. We will carry on with questions of you. I just want to make the point. It's the reason that we asked them to be dealt with in advance so that we can cut out that 40 minutes and get to the questions.
So we requested the 90 minutes and then there was some squeezing around to try and assist another submitter this afternoon. But we have Mr. Barnes to talk about Cadrona and then I'm available for questions on my evidence in respect of the submitters. So I've been observing many, you've seen in the back, it would seem unfair for Real Journeys to be limited to the time when an observation is most others have gone over and on.
But
so I've sat in the back for a couple of hours, but been delayed, sir?
They've gone over because of the questioning, not because of the reading out the evidence. That's the point I was making. We will hear from Mr. Barnes. Mr. Edmund, you want to contribute some time, do you?
If I can sustain, my time in tourism won't be utilisable, it's allocated time. It's heading for your journeys to do some of the time.
Thank you.
So you've got 4 minutes.
We've got 4 minutes, great. Take it away. I won't be putting any new evidence on the table. First, I'll just want to say thank you for the opportunity to talk today, and I will keep it short and hopefully to the point. My name is Eric Barnes. I do know most of you here, but just in case, for those who don't know me, I work for Cadrona Alpine Resorts. I've been there just under 2 years. Previous to that, I was the GM for infrastructure for Queenstown Lakes and Southland District Council. I also spent 12 years managing the infrastructure, both with the US Antarctic Program and the New Zealand Antarctic Program, which I think puts me in a great position to really understand the unique challenges of managing development in this beautiful and unique environment, and the complexity of the issues that yourselves are dealing with in addressing some of these district planning issues. So with that, I also want to acknowledge the work that you have done to date and the council has done. Obviously, there's some areas that we would like changes to, and just updating that. What I'd like to do today is really focus more on why we think this is important to us as Cadrona Alpine Resort, and just our role within that community. Just to give you a little background, if you may or may not know, Cadrona Alpine Resort was founded by John Lee. And it really, John Lee, as a local resident of the Cadrona Valley, he had a great vision. And part of that was in creating a place for people to enjoy the stunning mountains, and also looking at promoting growth within the region. We were purchased by an Australian owner, the Beals. The development continued over several decades. They installed new lifts, new buildings, and expanded the operation. The ski area continued to see growth over that period. In recent years, Cadrona Alpine Resort has been purchased by Real Journeys. And being back in New Zealand ownership and owned by a local family has seen the new energy and growth within the business itself. The development has continued and is supporting that economic growth and job opportunities within Queenstown and Wanaka and across the region. As a winter resort, Cadrona Alpine Resort offers the broadest range of skiing and snowboarding related activities in New Zealand, and as we would consider it as the premier resort for snow sports in Australasia. The resort caters for guests of all abilities and disciplines, which makes it one of the most diverse fields in New Zealand. We facilitate a range of ski school activities. We also have a Ministry of Education certified preschool, child care facility, which highlights the fact that we are not only looking for seasonal employees, but we're also looking for developing professionals and keeping them in the local area. We also cater for the more advanced, we have a high performance center, which provides training for skiers and snowboarders, and this includes top international skiers, which regularly come to our venue from around the globe. We have the largest and most diverse terrain park, so we have two world-class half pipes. We have park and terrain features, not only for the first-time skier, but for Olympic athletes and X Games champions. As a summer resort, and this is the new area of development that we're heading into, Cadrona has invested heavily in the development of summer activities over the past 2 years. Last year, we initiated summer operations for the first time. We had lift-assisted mountain biking and the development of 7 trails as a trial. We also opened up our cafe and the hotel for the first time ever during the summer. My first year of operation was a trial period and consisted of 16 days of operation to see if it was viable. The success of that trial last year led us to open the doors this year for over 70 days of operation. We have further invested as a company developing 20 more trails and connections. We now run 2 lifts with the capability to lift mountain bikes up. We've also opened the doors again to our cafe. We have retail on the mountain now, and we also have our hotel is now open. The success of the hotel and the cafe has been highlighted with the majority of bookings being fully booked over the season. Kajona has also invested in a brand new Australasia's first mountain karting. This is gravity-assisted karts, similar to, you would say, the luge, but actually more of a mountain biking, all-terrain style karting, which we have imported at significant expense from Germany. And have developed two specific trails to make this operation successful. As a town connector, Kajona has invested heavily in the development of Kajona Corner, which is a new information center, tourism center, and retail within the middle of Wanaka, which is a huge development for Kajona, but also the community. So the question always comes down to, you know, why do we care as a company? Our vision is to have epic experiences on our mountain with our people. We take that very seriously. Our values embrace our people, embraces excellence, it embraces safety, and embraces the environment, environmental protection, and innovative growth. When we talk about our people, we mean everyone. It's not just our staff. It's not just us. It's everyone here. It's everyone in the community. It's our guests on the mountain. And when we talk about our mountain, it's about all of us enjoying it, having fun, protecting it, and ensuring that it has a good outcome, and not only in the summer, or not only in the winter, but through the summer as well. We are a commercial business, but we understand the social connections and contributions that we need to embrace that makes all of us successful. Whether it is on the mountain, locally in Kajona Village, Queenstown, Wanaka, or nationally, we embrace that vision of actually the community working together. Carl is committed to growing the business. We are investing in new infrastructure and pushing into new opportunities, as I described earlier, for year-round operation. We are community-focused, we're passionate, and have a drive to commit and commitment to ensure excellence and innovation in whatever we do. As a community, we share each other's success, and we need to ensure we are able to actively manage and promote growth in that year-round tourism sector. As an employer, we need to help promote sustained growth and build the local capability of retaining the expertise and building that capability to retain it in the local area. And that's really to create that lifeblood of the community and develop and support the growth of families within that community. We realize that the lifeblood of our success is through our people and ensuring that they have the housing and ability to actively engage year-round is important to us. Kajona Alpine Resort generates employment for over 560 staff in the winter. We also have a focus on growth and development of our summer operations. This highlighted with the fact of over 3 years ago we had zero employees for summer. This summer we have 100 staff on the mountain. That's with employment. So the investment and development of this growth in Kajona has led to significant increase also in the full-time employment. 2013 we had 10 staff. This year we have 40 full-time staff. So you can see the development that we are actually putting in that focus. As a company, we are committed to building our business and supporting the development of our local community. As an example of this, we are working with the local Kajona Valley residents and also council in ways of actually dealing with the sewage in the Kajona Valley. Looking at our growing community and our challenge as a company, there are significant pressure facing us with the winter sports, so skiing and snowboarding. There is rising costs of operation. There is the tension of growth in tourism. We need to be able to respond appropriately to that growth. Also increasing expectations from our guests. They want more and they want different things. We have increased safety requirements and challenges of legislation. We have the fast-paced nature of our changing trends. We do live in a sport that has changes yearly. And climate change pressures also lead to us needing to focus on more unique products to ensure financial viability into the future. One of the other big challenges that we have is also how we invest in our product and utilizing the ski resort in the summer. New Zealanders do not see ski resorts currently as being summer activities. We view ourselves as a year-round resort and are committed in promoting that across and changing the market. Kajana has also seen sustained visitor growth of around 10% over the past several years. So, looking at this year, or this past winter season, we had over 250,000 guests coming to our mountain in the winter, and we're also seeing sustained growth in those numbers in summer. This growth is predicted to continue, meaning a higher level of demand and need to expand to support the growth that's within just the normal infrastructure, but also new products that we were able to provide. Kajana Alpine Resort is committed to investing in that future through the development of new infrastructure, expansion of our business into year-round activities, and supporting our people and communities to succeed. The district plan is an important element in helping us to recognize this and the importance of tourism and providing the mechanisms to help manage growth in an appropriate manner that, one, does not stifle the sound investment opportunities, promotes development, promotes the ability to work more effectively and efficiently, and supports the growth of our local people with year-round employment to build a stronger community and family connections, and also supports our drive of creating those epic experiences on our mountain with our people. So with that, I'll close out. I'm happy to answer any questions. Sorry, that's probably 6 minutes.
I'll take to your evidence. Page 20, paragraph 72. If we are referring to the district's transporting road connections and that. Is there something specifically that you saw that the district plan needed to do in that regard? And if so, how?
I do think there could be reference, Commissioner, for some form of linkages to the strategic transport planning documents. There's some, as I say, linkage or guidance to help with the development plan.
I take it that at the moment you haven't seen any of that.
No, not stuck out from memory. And perhaps, and I'm not sure if it's in the specific submissions we requested, but acknowledgement of the issue, recognition of the issue.
Which issue? Sorry.
Transport.
The whole issue, sorry.
Well, the shortcomings of the district's transport system.
Thank you.
In paragraph 79, page 22, at the end you refer to the market determining where the businesses are located. Is that part there related to that objective we were discussing earlier with Ms. Black regarding? Did you have a view on the way the chair suggested that another way of reading that when you read it, that policy that way?
I think you heard from Ms. Black around the reception of the interpretation of that. My view is that it could be more specific. It's intended to talk about new developments. It should be specific about that. I agree with Ms. Blake that when it's talking about lifting the scope, lifting the quality of attractions, it does imply that the existing attractions are not of high quality. I can see how she came to that conclusion. And I suspect that's not what was intended by the policy.
Because I don't have you. Did you?
I haven't commented on that.
Have you provided some wording you suggested and how that might be changed?
No, I haven't, because I haven't addressed that particular issue, my evidence which is raised by Ms. Beck.
Turning to paragraph 90, page 24. So we're talking here about this regional infrastructure. What would be included in the definition of regional infrastructure excludes associated with water transport? Is that the only part that's in there, or should it be these wider tourism infrastructure items?
I think it would be good and appropriate in the context of the local Queensland district for all tourism infrastructure to be recognised and provided for. I'm not sure that all tourism infrastructure would be or should be captured by definition of regionally significant infrastructure unless there was evidence before you to suggest that all infrastructure associated with tourism is a regional, is regionally significant and regionally significant benefits. And I know that the proposed RPS isn't clear on that matter in attempting to define and provide for regionally significant infrastructure. And that's why my evidence is framed as saying if it's not included as in the definition of regionally infrastructure, it should be provided for somehow.
Does Real Journeys have submissions in on the RPS in regard to that?
I think so. I'm not. There's certainly. I didn't do the submission for Real Journeys, but there is. They are submitters, and they are seeking the tourism activities infrastructure. I'm sure will be provided for.
What's your definition of tourism infrastructure?
Sarah, I don't have a definition, but on the face of it, I'd say it's any infrastructure associated with tourism activity, which therein lies what's the definition of tourism activity, which Real Journeys has attempted to put forward in its submission.
So is that infrastructure as defined in Section 2 of the RMA, or have you got some other definition of infrastructure?